Yazad Darasya is the managing editor of Zawiya. He's been covering events. Yazad, many thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Richard.
A couple of big stories out of there. Let's begin, first of all, with the Dubai dry docks. That restructuring seems to have been done and dusted today down at the Dubai World Tribunal. $2.2 billion. Is that it now? Can we say that the Dubai dry docks restructuring is finished?
The Dubai dry docks restructuring is finished, yes. The $2.2 billion having been approved by the tribunal. However, that's only a little drop in the whole debt ocean. So there's still a lot to go. And most of dry docks' creditors have already indicated their support for the five-year restructuring proposal. And the sanction just makes it effective as of today. So we all knew that this was going to come. And now Dubai has to turn its attention to the other billions of dollars that it needs to restructure over the next 3 years, which will come due for maturity and payment.
Well, I know one other story out of the Dubai World Tribunal you've been covering today. It's a much smaller amount of money, but it's an interesting story. Just $15 million, relatively speaking. But this is to do with the World Islands.
It's the first time that an investor has kind of, you know, received a large sum of money back. What happened at the Dubai World Tribunal today was that the tribunal ordered the repayment of 37 million dirhams to an investor who had used the money to reserve three islands on the world, which is, you know, the man-made archipelago in the shape of a world map off Dubai's coast. The tribunal ordered the world, which is a subsidiary of developer Nakheel, to give back money to Shokat Dalal, the money that he had paid in 2008 to keep the plots off the market as he negotiated for their purchase. Dalal made the deposits at the height of the property boom, which came, of course, as we all know, to an abrupt halt at the start of the global financial crisis. What the tribunal ruled was, and this I think is most interesting, is that there was no agreement between Dalal and the world stipulating that he was not free to withdraw from the arrangement and have his money refunded. So it's not as if he's been given an award because the project is delayed or put on hold or cancelled or whatever. It's just that he wants out of it, and there was no clause in the contract he signed with Nakheel saying that he can't withdraw from it. So, and this is the first time that this has happened in Dubai.
Let's look at some of the other stories that you're covering on Zawiya today. One of them is about Qatar, Doha, leading the takeover tables.
It does seem to be Qatar's time, isn't it? Because until the end of 2011, the maximum acquisitions made outside of a country by a Gulf country were by the UAE. The United Nations recently put out a report which said that the UAE is the largest Arab investor in cross-border acquisitions in 2011. But now Qatar seems to be powering ahead. I mean, it's made a lot of acquisitions, including Kuwait's Watania Telecom, which it bought for $2.2 billion. It's taken stakes in the British Airports Authority. It's taken stakes in Barclays, in Credit Suisse. So the acquisition interest was dented by the financial crisis and the political interest. The political unrest in the region. But Qatar, which has a lot of gas revenue, has invested its dollars to take advantage of attractive buying opportunities. The number of acquisitions in the Middle East has increased, but the volumes remain lower than the pre-crisis boom of 2006 and 2007, signaling that it's a more fragmented but perhaps a healthier environment for regional deal-making. So I think we're going to see a lot of mergers and acquisitions activity picking up this year, and driven by Gulf countries, which have a lot of oil dollars to spend, and they're going out making all kinds of acquisitions, from trophy acquisitions to things that are going to prove money spinners in the long run.
Another regional story you're covering today, and this is an interesting one that I've been tracking for a while, Egypt and Egypt's currency. We've heard from the government today that they are not going to devalue the Egypt pound, which a lot of people think would make sense for Egypt.
A lot of economists have said that a reduction in the value of the currency would kind of, you know, spur demand, would spur more tourism inflows, etc. But Egypt's new president, Mohamed Morsi, has told Reuters in an exclusive interview, the first interview that he's given to newswires, that he's not going to devalue the currency, he's not going to impose new taxes, and instead he's going to rely on increased investment, increased tourism, and increased exports to fix an economy that's been ravaged by about a year and a half of political turmoil. Morsi has turned his attention from political issues. You know that in the past he's taken posts, major posts away from big army leaders, and he's kind of consolidated his political position. Now he's turned his attention to the economy, which needs serious attention. It's an economy that has not only stagnated, but in one quarter even gone into negative after the revolution began in Egypt in January 2011. So, he's got political goodwill, and just 50 days into his tenure as Egypt's first freely elected president, he's turned his attention to the economy. He's decided to have a lot of ties with a lot of countries that are important to Egypt in terms of importing goods from Egypt, in terms of sending tourists to Egypt, and in terms of investing in Egypt's infrastructure, real estate, and other sectors.
Now, Yazad, your final story today is an interesting one, and it's certainly one that's going to interest motorists here in Dubai and the UAE, because it's about Enoch, the petrol company. And while Enoch may be closing some of its petrol stations in the Northern Emirates, it's expanding into Saudi Arabia. Tell us more.
It is such a long-running story, isn't it, Richard, that all petrol retailers in the UAE are running at a loss, because they say that they're buying fuel at global market rates, but they're forced to sell it at about a 50% subsidy. So obviously they're not making any profits, and in fact they're going into losses. Enoch has found a way around this, and it has signed a joint venture with Aldrees Petroleum and Transport Services Company, which is one of Saudi Arabia's largest petroleum retailers. And according to this joint venture, they're going to set up service stations across the kingdom, starting with 40 in the eastern province, and with a capital investment of 40 to 45 million Saudi rial, and then going on to make an overall investment of 400 million Saudi rial, which is about a similar amount of UAE dirhams. This is obviously going to help boost Enoch's revenues, as the profit margin in Saudi Arabia is better. Is actually, you know, it actually exists as opposed to the UAE. And look at what Abdullah Aldrees, the chief executive of Aldrees Petroleum, has to say. He says that 95-octane petroleum has a profit margin of 18% in Saudi Arabia. 91-octane petroleum has a profit margin of more than 25%. So obviously, Enoch's looking at this kind of expansion into countries that do not subsidize their fuel too much, or at least allow retailers to buy at a subsidized price to fix its balance sheet. And I'm probably expecting a lot of other retailers like Emirates and others to follow suit.
Yazad, it's always good to get your views and your thoughts. I really appreciate you sharing them with us tonight. Yazad Darasha there. He's the managing editor of Zawiya. Thanks very much indeed for joining us.